Thank you very much. Very well is a huge word. Okay. First of all, thanks for this public debate, which I think that it is interesting how it is or how it has been so far, the conference workshop which you organized. Now, the title of this public discussion is something which, as the title of the panel where I was involved yesterday, forced me to think a bit about some of these big European themes. So we talk here about exactly political crisis, loss of legitimacy, and the far right in Europe. Now, I would like to focus mostly on these two terms. These two first concepts, political crisis and eventually legitimacy. I don't actually think, and I discuss a bit with Dimitris about that, I don't think that crisis maybe is anymore the right word, in the sense that we are experiencing, at least in the last years, a number of endless crises, which is more, in my view, a sort of downturn of European politics, economy, and society overall. So there is a line which is going basically down, and probably we will be, I don't know, I hope not, but living in this situation for a number of years. The two big questions which came out of this are, in my view, first of all, what and where is politics today? And what is legitimacy today? Now, if we link this with the far right, I believe, as I already said, that economy alone cannot explain the rise of the far right. It helps a lot, but certainly is not the only factor which we should use to understand the rise of these movements. Then, second point, which I already made, we cannot talk about rise. Rise is the wrong term today in reference to the far right, extreme right, radical right, neo-Nazis or neo-fascists. Now, let's forget terminology and definition for a while, because these parties have been rising since a while now. The first real electoral success of this, in some ways, modern, but in reality also old, far right started in the 80s with Jean-Marie Le Pen and his Front National. So the 80s were some years ago, at least. So we cannot talk about rise, and we should not talk about rise anymore. Now, what and where is politics today, and why this helps eventually the success and the implementation of the far right? If we start looking at the left and at the center left, so let's say a leftist world, I know I'm a bit generalizing because then we should see case by case and country by country, but let's say for some of them, the fall of the Berlin Wall was a turning page. Many of these parties embraced fully, in some cases, but in a number of examples, they were very keen to embrace at least neoliberalism as the new agenda, as the new core. Some of them have been moving toward the center. Now, this was even understandable in some ways, because, I mean, there has been a period where we believed, if we think about people like Clinton or Blair and so on, that we were actually experiencing a period of almost unstoppable economic growth. So it was natural, probably, I suspect, for some of these parties to position themselves toward the center and looking at the markets as the main option. What this led in a number of cases is that this actually came with the abandoning of traditional labor teams. And this includes, firstly, factories. I mean, factories in terms of where the working class is based, or not just factory as a physical place. In a number of nations, we see that the left, or part of the left, was not interested anymore in the working class, or at least it was interested, but believing probably that in any case the working class was following them, or that there were other sectors in the society which were appealing in order to gain power. The outcome of this process is that in places like Italy and France, for example, in some industrial districts was not anymore the Communist Party or some of the leftist trade unions which helped workers, and then the votes were going to the left. It was rather, on the contrary, the Northern League, which worked very hard on a grassroots level to be close to the working class and to people considering themselves at the bottom of the social ladder. In France, similarly, for a period, scholars, and not just scholars, but also newspapers, talk about this Le Penisme ouvrier, so this working class Le Penism. So all these workers voting for Jean-Marie Le Pen. Now, there are a number of reasons also for that, but eventually this might be discussed in the public discussion. Something else which the left, and in Italy this is, in my view, very evident, completely left out, was the role of culture. Now, we don't need, in my view, specifically to follow Gramsci, to know what it should be done, at least. And I don't think that it is central anyway. But certainly, it started even repelling intellectuals, the whole intellectual world, because they wanted to gain power, and so everything which looked old had to be, in some way, destroyed. And in the case of Italy, this included also abandoning anti-fascism. So anti-fascism was not useful anymore because the world was changing. These people were probably too keen to gain power after years where, for even Cold War reasons, let's say, the Italian Communist Party, despite being the biggest Communist Party in the Western world, had no possibility to be leading a government or to join a government. At local regional level was different, but you know, in terms of leading the nation was not possible. So anti-fascism was one of these old themes not appealing anymore. A clear example of this has been when Luciano Violante, a leading, a former judge, a leading figure of the Italian center-left, in a parliamentary debate, he said that we need to understand the reasons of young people fighting with Salò, so fighting for the Italian Social Republic and fighting so for fascism against other Italians and with the Nazi troops, basically. So understanding their reasons meant, for many of them, well, they were Italians, were fighting for an Italy which was still Italy, and they always claimed that they wanted pension for their role during the war. So this was publicly something which had some implication on the imaginary also of the Italian, let's say, wider public opinion. So naturally it was an undermining of anti-fascism, but also a sort of legitimization of what was something that before was similarly far from the political leadership of the country. In this narrative of where is politics, I've been discussing with Federico about this yesterday. There is also the role, which I don't have answers, but I would like people to say something about that, is the role of the radical left as well. Because what I found paradoxical, and still I cannot give an answer to this, is that, especially in the last decades, we are seeing a strong crisis of a certain type of capitalism, but still, in, let's say, Europe-wide, the radical left is unable to get votes, with people rather voting for far-right parties or for anti-EU parties, like in the last European elections. So I don't know if this was for the use of an old language, for an inability to attract some of the voters, or maybe for the inability, and in Italy this was clear since the 68 probably, of communist, Western European communists to understand a society which probably was in transition. But as I said, this is, I don't really know what's happened there. But it is part of these narratives of legitimacy, downturn, and creating a favorable ground for the rise of the far right. Now, in this context, let's be more general and see what happened in Europe as well. From, let's say, at least the 80s onwards, we have the rise of what can be called an anti-anti-fascist reading of history and politics. Now, a case like Italy is very evident for a number of reasons. Some of them I just said a few words. But also in terms of European integration, there has been an anti-anti-fascist prominence in building the supranational level where we are actually living in. So both nationally in some nation and internationally, anti-anti-fascism, which was not necessarily led by the people who were fascist, often were conservative or part of the center-right, or even small section of the center-left, which never really believed in anti-fascism or were excluded by it. What this led again is that anti-anti-fascism is one of those reasons which led to the banalization and so the legitimization of the far right. Because initially they were not actually undermining mainstream politics. I mean, this anti-anti-fascism mostly led to a revision of our understanding of interwar fascism. And therefore, so consequently, it was a sort of rehabilitation of some regimes or some fascist or fascistic leaders. So there is some work on public memory here which has been done. And so if fascism was not looking too bad, well, the contemporary far right could not be so terrible, because if fascism was legitimized in some ways, these people were looking certainly much more democratic than Mussolini or Hitler. So this led to the acceptance of the recent permutation of fascism. Then another point which had to be made to understand this legitimacy or this crisis leading to the far right is that politicization and mediatization of immigration as a theme in the public discussion. So if before, and this happened in some country before than in others, so if immigration before was something which was there, but some political parties never use a language which could look very similar to the anti-immigration far right, At some point, if you look at the 80s, for example, in France, with the success of Jean-Marie Le Pen, we have a politicization. So immigration became a strong tool for the political debate and also an electoral tool. So even mainstream party and some mainstream media started discussing about immigration as eventually a problem. They need to integrate, they need to accept our values. I can feel some smelling coming from the kitchen of these people and so on. All this was said by mainstream politicians, and certainly because the multi-ethnic landscape of the ethnic landscape of our European society was changing pretty fast as well, had an impact, because certainly not all countries had a proper policy of integration, and certainly this is something which is missing at a European level as well. Another point which changed was the media acceptance of some of these far-right leaders. There are some interesting books on this topic, and once more, Le Pen, Jean-Marie Le Pen, is an interesting example because he was invited in television, the radio, the newspapers, and so on. So he looked acceptable. So if before there was a sort of anti-fascist or, let's say, even ultra in some cases, pro-democratic approach, at some point this was broken. So these people are different, these people can be accepted into the political system. Now, if we go on the other side of the spectrum, so where is politics? The center-right. I mean, historically, we see that the center-right in Europe, so considered roughly as a whole, for a long period has been adapting to some of the leftist themes. Marc Lazar, a French political scientist and historian, wrote somewhere that it was even gauchisé, so it became a bit left, especially in terms of things like welfare state, labor protections, and so on. So it had to follow the social democrats on some teams. Then, with people on the other side of the sea, so Reagan, Thatcher, and a number of other leaders across Europe, we start seeing a change with this acceptance of free market, so less state, more focus on the private sectors, this idea of big or small societies, entrepreneurs, marketing, and so on. Now, why this is also relevant, not just because, as we know, the center-left is following this model today, with implication on European politics, which I'm going to say, and so creating a favorable environment for the far-right, but also because this, along with these anti-fascist readings, has started undermining some of the pillars of Europe. I'm not saying of European Union, because in my view there is sometimes these two terms need to be separated. Pillars of Europe like welfare, like labor protection, and like culture. So some of the distinct features of European life. So at some point, we all asked at least once in our life, looking at the, let's say, modern European politics, well, what is then the difference between the center-right and the center-left in some teams? Recently, in a number of countries, we see that they are in governments together, so alliances. This crisis or downturn of traditional politics is also one of the reasons which explain the rise of demagogic movements, because people don't trust these elites anymore, or trust less these elites anymore. And especially people at the bottom of the social ladder felt abandoned by this traditional politics, and they could not see any differences between, let's say, traditional center-left and a traditional center-right. An example today is austerity in Europe, which is a vision of Europe austerity, which is a neoliberal vision of Europe. Now, we can agree or disagree with some of the implementation of the austerity and so on, but I'm not interested in this. But what we see, certainly, is that all these main parties, in many ways, they accept austerity full stop. Even, it was very funny for me to see these debates, also in international newspaper in Britain, about Matteo Renzi, the Italian Prime Minister, as the perfect counterbalance to Angela Merkel. I mean, he was fully mad. He was saying this in Italy then, after the meetings with German politicians. He was saying, well, to them, yeah, I agree with you, and full stop. Moscovici, the French commissioner, well, in some interviews that he had, when he realized that he needed votes, he said, well, we need to work with these measures, with these pacts, with these treaties. So, in reality, there is no actual different visions. All this left a tremendous vacuum where anti-European and, among them, many far-right movements could attract voters. Also because, really, part of the electorate don't see any strong differences between traditional parties, don't see many different visions. Legitimacy here is important because, in my view, especially in southern European countries, there is a perception of a strong lack of democratic legitimacy in these measures, because the main idea is that they are imposed from abroad. So, in this context, we don't need simply another vision of Europe, as, let's say, part of the radical left is trying to offer, but we need someone actually defending us, defending our nations, going back to the nations, going back to our national currencies. Now, this is central, in my view, to understand the very recent appeal of this party, because they are extremely demagogic. So what they promise is a world which in reality is not existing. Now, going back to our old Borghi, territoire métropolitain, to our kingdoms, is something which is outside any possible understanding of the future, actually. But it's very appealing because it's demagogic, it's an easy solution. But also because, as I said, other parties don't offer any difference here. So, if there is an external enemy, I protect you. And what the far right is doing, and has been doing traditionally in many ways, is offering a model of protection. It's offering an identity. And the identity is almost always built because there are some enemies, because there are others, because there are the difference. So I am in this way because there are them. But if we get over of them, we will be back again, we will be great, and we will have again Rome as the capital of an empire, the ancient Greek, and so on, and so on, and so on, or even the British Empire back, and so on. So this now this led to the legitimacy of the far right, in my view. And what I found specifically interesting is that, if we move to this from this level to then the national ones, we can see various examples of the rise. Now, it's not exactly that in all countries parties are getting success or they are actually coming to the fore because there are all these factors, but certainly some of them seems to be there. And in this context of legitimization of interwar fascism, or even post-war fascism for countries who had dictatorship after the actual Second World War, with these anti-fascist readings, with this homogenization of this part of the center-right, with part of the center-left, what we see is that, well, for part of the public, for part of the media, these people are not only not fascist anymore, they're not even extremist. So there is a full acceptance of them in politics. And to conclude, I just want to offer you the example of my own sick man of Europe, which is Italy, among many others, to be honest. But what we found in Italy was not a full legitimization of former fascists or neo-fascists or how do you want to call them. We had them in power, we have them in positions, we have them in key roles. Now, you all know history, recent history of Italy, Berlusconi, key figures. Since Berlusconi was there, all international media was looking at Italy. Now, maybe less. But in reality, it was not just Berlusconi the key problem in Italy, because, I mean, Berlusconi is even the outcome of some of the things which I said so far. But what Berlusconi did, it has been able to attract a vast majority of the extreme right vote for his anti-communist rhetoric. So Berlusconi was great because he created communists when communists were disappearing from Italy, roughly. But he was there. He used this strong anti-communist rhetoric and he was really able to attract all these votes and along with them all these anti-anti-fascist votes. Now, it was not just attracting the votes which was the problem. It was that Berlusconi actually changed the political landscape in Italy and he was governing with former neo-fascists and with a xenophobic, at that time, regionalist-only movement called Lega Nord or Northern League. Now, the funny thing is that with this overall framework which I described so far, Berlusconi has been able to change terminology in Italy. Now, in Italy, my big question mark is that, okay, we know exactly that the extreme right is Casapound, the extreme right is Fiamma Tricolore, the extreme right is Forza Nuova, but are we actually sure that the extreme right in Italy is only that? Or the extreme right in Italy is part of the mainstream right? Because what Berlusconi did, since he arrived in power in Italy, so the first electoral campaign with the former neo-fascist of the Italian social movement, the Northern League, he said, we are the coalition of moderates. And he has been using this terminology with the media and so on that, well, they were considered as the moderates after a while. They were not extremists or fascists. They've been in government. Part of this neo-fascist joined Berlusconi in a new container called, at that time, Popolo della Libertà. Now, not many people seem to know, and every time that I see these people look at me as an alien, but one of the founders of the PDL, of Berlusconi's party, is Alessandra Mussolini, granddaughter of Benito Mussolini. She never denied, quite on the contrary, she glorified the fascist past. She was part of Alleanza Nazionale, Fidesz party. She founded for a while a neo-fascist anti-immigrants movement called Azione Sociale. And when Berlusconi's party was founded, the second Berlusconi party, she was one of the fathers of this movement. So now, imagine someone calling himself Hitler, being the grandson or granddaughter of Adolf Hitler, being part of the main conservative movement in Germany. So this, the key point here is that this was not even debated. This was actually normal, acceptable. Well, she's fun, she's a folkloristic, she's a character, she goes on TV, she starts screwing, well, as Greek people you understand me, in terms of this type of politics, and the fact that she was one of the father of the party, and the fact that 100 delegates from her neo-fascist party and so on were there in this founding conference was not a problem. These people ended up in Europe's People Party. So, I mean, ended up in the party leading the European Union. So, where is politics? And I end up with this. Thanks.